At that point, we were already the most booked glamping site in the UK. And it was kind of one of those things, a lot of people tried to talk me out of it because there was, in theory, there might be benefit, but it could be detrimental because we were already, you know, really established. Our content was huge. So, and if you go on there and make yourself look like a fool, then, you know, it could be bad. But as I said earlier on, you know, I like pushing myself out of my comfort zone and trying different things. So I thought, you know what, let's go for it. And we did the filming in May last year, and that was aired last month. So, and then since then, it's just been, you know, unbelievable.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. So a buddy and I were chatting about the future of hospitality the other day, and one of the resounding themes that we just like kept coming back to was the idea that highly curated and original experiences are the new luxury when it comes to travel, right? Like everyone wants something bespoke, everyone wants something unique. Now, not everyone can design like an Instagram-worthy Airbnb or build like a truly unique stay on like the perfect parcel of land, but every hospitality entrepreneur can deliver a unique, one-of-a-kind experience for guests. And the truth of the matter is that you can't provide these sorts of experiences at scale without digital guidebooks, which is why I'm super excited to tell you a little bit about my new friends at Hostfully. Hostfully digital guidebooks are the easiest way to help your guests get to know your property and discover just how special the community that surrounds it is. Hostfully guidebooks give you a dynamic place to store every bit of information you might want your guests to have, from the Wi-Fi password to how to work the hot tub to where to take the best selfies at golden hour. That's one of my favorites, actually, so be sure you do that if you don't already. Hostfully empowers you with easy-to-use tools that help you feature a totally curated list of your favorite eateries, pubs, hiking trails, and more. Or Hostfully can automatically create a list of experiences through their guidebook wizard if you've got dozens of properties and just can't afford to curate a custom set of recommendations for each one. But here's where things get even more exciting. You guys listening? You sure? Listening. All right, cool. Listen up. You can create a marketplace within Hostfully guidebooks that enables you to sell things like early check-in, late checkout, airport transfers, a custom romance package, kayak rentals, etc. Your guests can purchase these add-ons directly through your guidebook before or during their stay, which enables you to make a little extra cash money. All right. I know what you're thinking, right? You're like, Zach, this all must cost an arm and a leg, right? But that's where you'd be wrong, friends. If you're just starting out on your hospitality entrepreneurial journey and have just one property, your first guidebook is totally free. If you have multiple properties, it's also super affordable. For example, it costs just $25 a month for up to 5 properties. But if you use the discount code BTS at checkout, you can get 2 free months for any Hostfully guidebook subscription. Again, that's BTS as in Behind the Stays. So if one of your goals this year is to try to up your guest experience game, there's really no reason to not give Hostfully a try. Head on over to hostfully.com/BTS. That's BTS as in Behind the Stays to learn more about Hostfully guidebooks. Again, that's hostfully.com/BTS. And be sure to use the discount code BTS at checkout. And if you talk to the team there, tell them that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way. In just a moment, you'll meet Dari Green, the creator and visionary behind The Secret Garden Glamping, the UK's most booked, most wishlisted, and most viewed glamping site with a 2+ year waiting list. Dari has always loved the outdoors. Growing up, he and his family were avid campers. Some of his favorite childhood memories involved playing in the woods with his brother and sitting around the campfire telling stories. When COVID hit, Derry and his children were, like most of us, stuck inside a lot. On one particular day when his kids were going a bit stir crazy, Derry asked if they wanted to camp in their garden. His kids were ecstatic and he began building them a fort. And while he didn't know it at the time, building this fort would give him an idea that would change the course of his life forever. You see, Derry and his kids loved the experience so much that they decided to build an experiential glamping stay for the whole world to enjoy. Tune in to hear Derry and I discuss how he landed on Dragon's Den, the UK's version of Shark Tank, to pitch his idea, how he's leveraged influencers and creator partnerships to amass a 2+ year wait list with thousands of booking requests that he has to turn away every single week, why he's bullish on building an experience that prioritizes outdoor amenities rather than obsessing over the unit design, what he's learned about leveraging content and social media to build a brand, how he's thinking about franchising his brand to expand internationally, and so much more. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Derry. All right, Derry, good sir, we are live. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. Yeah, busy as ever, but it's always exciting.
You were just telling me that you were like just painting some walls and putting down some flooring and you're popping in for this quick interview. And then you've got a kid that could be born at any second. So you sound like an incredibly just busy person. So I'm honored that you're taking some time to share your story with us.
No problem. Yeah, there's always something going on. We've got a new unit opening next week. So we're doing the photo shoot this weekend. So just getting all the finishing touches done. It's looking great at the minute. And yeah, Chelsea is due any day now. So trying to get that done before the baby gets here.
Wow. Yeah. You know, the funny thing about entrepreneurship, right, is like, I feel like it's this beautiful, like sexy thing at first. People are always like, oh, you get to work for yourself. You do your own hours. You can work whenever you want. And the reality is like, there's just always more to do. It just never stops. Like you don't get to plug in from a 9 to 5 and then come home and have a couple beers and just forget about life, right, until 9 a.m. the next day. It's like, it is always on. It's almost like you work way more and it's way more exhausting and the to-do list is never ending. It's not as sexy as everyone paints it out to be, from my perspective at least.
Yeah, I'd hate to try and calculate what my hourly rate is. I'm probably on like 30 pence an hour or something stupid like that. It's ridiculous. But it is, you know, it's really good. I speak to friends of mine about this and they say I'm always working. I'm always here doing something, but like genuinely I don't see this as a job. It's my hobby. I'd do it for free. So just as if if you were into mountain biking and you got to mountain bike every day, you wouldn't see it as work even if you were getting paid to do it. It's the same with me. So it's it's a bit of both, but there is a lot to do.
Oh gosh. Well, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, ever since I've stumbled upon the incredible project that you've been working on over the last few years. And I want to talk all about Secret Garden Glamping and how that came to be. But I want to actually start by hearing a little bit about you as like a kid. Like when you were 10 years old, do you remember what you wanted to be when you grew up?
So I always use this same analogy when I'm talking to people. This is like my 10-year-old self. Well, I actually say my 12-year-old self, but in this case, it's like my 10-year-old self has designed the perfect job. So when me and my brother's 18 months younger than me, and from being, 6-7 years old, we'd be out from when it came sunrise to when it was sunset, building dens in the woods, building tree houses, all this sort of stuff. That's what we used to do day in, day out until we was, 16 or 17 maybe. Wow. And that was it. So it's like my 10-year-old self has gone, if you'd ask me what I want to do, well, I want to build dens in the woods all day. And that's what I'm literally doing. So it's a perfect fit.
Amazing. So you knew very early on, right? And for a lot of people, I like to ask this question to just about everyone that comes on the show. And most of the time, what they're doing is wildly different, right, than what they wanted to do as a 10-year-old. And you're one of the rare folks that are actually doing it. Like you're literally designing these incredibly cool experiential stays in the woods. And it's cool. It's cool to see sort of like people as an adult, right, build a business, build a career around something that they just loved doing as play as a child. It's actually pretty rare.
Yeah, it is. And, I love spending time outdoors. I love being in the woodland. I mean, you get great days like today where it's sunny, but even when it's raining, even on the worst, cold, miserable days, it's still so much better than sitting in an office all day or you're in a factory or whatever else it might be. I would genuinely do it for free. It's what I do in my spare time. So it's a lovely position to be in.
So I want to hear about the story behind Secret Garden Glamping. Like where does it begin? I've read a couple of articles. You guys have blown up. We'll talk about sort of how you know what it looks like today. It's the UK's most popular glamping site. You guys have over a million followers across your social platform. I mean, you guys have like exploded. But take us back to like the very, very beginning. Like where does this all start?
Yeah, so it was 4 years ago, almost to the day. So it was 4 years ago last week. I got a notification on Facebook for memories, and it was me and my son and my daughter. So in the COVID pandemic, in the UK, we had a really quite strict lockdown for months on end. So I was stuck at home, two young children at the time, just me and them, trying to find things to do with them each day. So we had a camping trip in the garden. That's how it all started. First night, camping trip in the garden. Woke up the next morning on the wet grass, wasn't very exciting for him. So I thought, right, we'll build a deck to camp on the next evening. So that's what it was. And that's what we did. And then as days turned into weeks and then into months, I just kept building more and more every day. At one point, I'd moved literally my whole living room into the garden. We had the TV out there, the sofa. So it was every time we needed something, we just added it on to the point where we didn't need to come back in the house. Wow. So by the end of that first lockdown, I'd created this whole outdoor area and what I now know to be a glamping pod. Never thought much of it, but I got contacted by a media organization to do a story on what people have been doing in lockdown. So the story was what a dad had built in lockdown for his kids. So there's me and my son and my daughter in front of the pod, and that's what I've built them, in lockdown. And I thought nothing more of it, but that story went viral. It was on Unilad, then it was shared by Lad Bible, and it just really gained traction. And people started messaging me, because my name's unusual, on Facebook, saying, can we book it for a holiday? I was like, why do you want to come and stay in my garden? That's just crazy. And I sat and stewed on it for a few days. And I thought, you know what? I've got nothing to lose. So I set up an Airbnb account and put it on Airbnb, went to bed, woke up the next morning. And I think on that first morning, there was about 150 bookings. And and probably about 1,000 messages. And in the space of sort of 2-3 days, it was fully booked for 2 years in advance. It just blew up. And then from there, I realized, actually, there's legs in this. There's obviously something that people want. So I spent the next year getting planning permission to actually turn a 4-acre woodland into the glamping site. And that's when it opened then in February of 2021 then.
Wow. That is so amazing. So you literally are just building something for you and your kids to, pass the time away as you can't go anywhere and do anything. Yeah. And that ends up completely, changing your life, right? Like this is what you're doing. What were you doing before this?
Yeah. So before this, I used to own a transport company. So we ship stuff to Europe. So France, Spain, Portugal.
Okay.
So I'd spend a week in Spain and a week here and come back in two all the time. So I was very rarely here. I missed like my son's football matches and my daughter's school plays and things like that. So I was never really around. And I was constantly on the road doing different things. And then when lockdown came, got stuck here. And since then, life's changed dramatically. At first, it was just me and the children. I actually met Chelsea, my partner, because she was one of the first guests to come and stay here. That's how we met. And now, 2.5 years later, we've got a baby due any day.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. So, your life literally was changed through this project. So, one of the big questions I have for people who kind of like stumble into this by accident is, at what point in time did you think to yourself, oh, there's a lot here. Like, let's actually design a proper business around what would have, could have just been a hobby. Was it really just seeing that story go viral and being booked out a couple of years, you're like, well, there's clearly, this has struck a chord with some people. What happens if we just do this at scale or was there more to it?
No, it's always been evolving. So when that first one went viral and it was amazing, but as with a lot of viral content, you have this big, meteoric rise and then this meteoric fall, and it's just, tomorrow's news sort of thing. So I was conscious of that and I thought, well, I'll do another and see what happens, assuming it wouldn't do the same thing. And I did a second one and it got bigger. I thought, okay, well, I'll do another and try it again. And I did a third one and it got bigger. And then, so every time I've gone along, I've always thought that that's kind of it, like that's going to be the end of the journey. And yeah. It's not. Every time we've done one, it's got bigger, our audience has grown, you know, we've got more bookings, it's just gone further and further. But I try not to treat it as a business. If I did, the kind of heart and soul of it is ripped out of it. If I sat and planned out work, what we were doing, and, you know, scheduled how much, you know, we're spending on units and how much we're spending on extras and toilet rolls and all these sorts of things like you should really do in a business,
yeah,
then it kind of takes away from it. So as long as it's still going, yeah, I really don't care. As long as we're creating jobs and creating memories for people, it doesn't really have to make, you know, I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it to be able to do something that I love doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's such a cool, like, perspective and a refreshing one, quite frankly, because I think sometimes, you know, once people experience a little bit of the taste of virality, or like, yeah, people would kill, a lot of listeners would kill to have their units booked 2 years out, right? And have these viral stories. And I think there's this moment that happens, and I've talked to several people where this has happened, where all of a sudden you kind of get in your head, right? Because you're like, whoa, we exploded. Our whether it's a reel going viral, whether it's, you know, this article in the press. And then they feel this pressure to like, well, got to do it again, right? Got to build bigger, got to build better. I can't let the people down, right? And, you know, I think that there's that's not necessarily a bad thing to build bigger and build better as your traction grows. But to your point, it can really take the fun out of it, right? To the point where you now feel kind of chained, and you're doing it for the eyeballs or the attention or the press rather than because you love it.
Yeah. Well, that is it. I mean, in all fairness, I do have to do that it's less driven by the audience and more driven by myself. So I always want to try, and I like pushing myself out of my comfort zone. I like doing things that I don't normally do. I like testing things. I like working things out. So I'm constantly evolving in what I'm creating because I've done that, so I want to do something else. Else I get bored. I do. If I built the same thing over and over again, I get bored. So the kind of evolution of the business is from my own kind of self and my interests and what I like doing. But it is challenging, you know, as we go forward. And I've kind of turned myself about 2 years ago. I kind of got lost on my journey a little bit. You know, at that point, we could go and open multiple sites ourselves, expand massively. And I realized all I was then doing was creating a job that I didn't want to do. And you know, I'd end up sitting in an office with cash flow forecasts and spreadsheets and board members. And I didn't do it to do that. So yeah. I kind of pulled back, although, you know, we do need to expand and there's lots of different things that we're doing, but in ways that I want to do it as opposed to ways that we'd have to do it in another direction.
Yeah, yeah. So well said. I want to hear a little bit about what the actual business is today. Like, or what is Secret Garden Glamping? Like, what does it look like in terms of number of units? Where are you guys located? Are you in multiple places, or is it all consolidated? Just give us a little bit of a rundown there.
Yeah, no, so currently we still just have the one site. So we're just building the last unit here. So we're up to 13 now. So this is the last unit on this site. We're not building any more here under our current planning permission, even though we have, you know, another probably double the amount of space that we use for the site. After that point, I think it kind of takes away from what we were trying to create. You're trying to create spaces where people can relax and unwind and have their own part of the woodland. If we do too much here, it just becomes like a holiday park, you know, like just full of people. So we are looking at opening multiple sites as we go forward now. But instead of just doing it with ourselves, it's actually trying to collaborate and partner up with other entrepreneurs who want to do the same sort of thing. You know, because we're turning away, well, pre-Dragon's Den, we were turning away 1,000 bookings a week. Since then, it's been like 10,000 bookings a week. It's ridiculous. So there's huge demand. And I know currently all of it's being lost to the likes of Airbnb and Booking.com, which don't really serve any businesses very well. So I want to find another avenue to kind of direct customers to. And that's with things like partnerships, collaborations, cooperatives. You're kind of working with other people, I think, works really well.
Yeah. So you mentioned Dragon's Den, which for our listeners, Dragon's Den was the OG Shark Tank that started in the UK. And you get on to Dragon's Den. And when does that happen? Like, what's What is the story behind that? Was it this Unilad article that kind of like, you know, inspired somebody to reach out? Did you reach out? Did you apply? Like how did you come to be on the show?
Yeah, so that was a combination of things. So we actually did the filming of that in May last year. So at the point where Dragon's Den appeared, that was through content that had been seen on Instagram, and the producers were speaking to us about it and if we wanted to go on the show. And you know, it was something I was looking at. At that point, we were already the most booked glamping site in the UK.
Wow.
And it was kind of one of those things. A lot of people tried to talk me out of it because there was, in theory, there might be benefit, but it could be detrimental because we were already, you know, really established. Our content was huge. So, and if you go on there and make yourself look like a fool,
yeah,
then, you know, it could be bad. But as I said earlier on, you know, I like pushing myself out of my comfort zone and trying different things. So I thought, you know what, let's go for it. And we did the filming in May last year.
Okay.
And that was aired last month. So,
wow.
And then since then, it's just been, you know, unbelievable. We got offers off all of the dragons. I actually made one of them cry for the first time in Dragon's Den history. You know,
wow.
It's been such an amazing response from business and from the general public as well. And it just came across really, really good. So it was really exciting to see.
Did you end up taking any of the offers?
Okay. Yeah. So I ended up selling 5% of the business to Deborah Meaden on the show. Yeah, it was really good.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So, and was the actual pitch, and I apologize, I haven't watched the episode. I will go and do that this weekend, but, if I can find it, what was the pitch? Was it for this kind of these next sites? Because again, this site, it was pretty much done at this point as you mentioned. So what was sort of the impetus behind actually going on the show?
So the reason I went on the show is because, like I said, at that point we weren't looking for an investment, so physical cash, it's not something we needed. But, you know, everything's a marketing opportunity. And what I tend to find is if you say yes to everything, you don't know where that's going to lead. So, I had no expectations of even getting an offer on Dragon's Den. I thought, you know what, let's put it out there and actually see if we can get, you know, a kind of good response from your well-established entrepreneurs. If they say you're going in the right direction, whether they invest or not, if they say you're doing well, then, you know, I've got to be, you know, it's kind of validation for me going forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's to expand and to open multiple locations and kind of get our name out there to a different audience as well.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Amazing. So one of the things that you said to me, Derry, that really struck a chord when we chatted briefly a week ago, you mentioned this idea that there's this thing happening in glamping, right, where you've got these really luxurious, gorgeous, high-end units being placed in sometimes not so attractive, quite frankly, nature, outdoor places, whether that's a cool desert or a forest, right, or a riverfront view. And some are, the land is cooler than others in some of these contexts, if we're being honest, right? But these units are stunning and they're, you know, gorgeous, and people are spending hundreds of dollars, if not $1,000 a night, to stay in a 380 square foot treehouse, right? Like this is something that's happening and it's really taking off, you know, in the States for sure. And I know that depending on who you talk to, people will say that like the UK and parts of Europe are actually like, you know, ahead of the US with respect to glamping in general. I think that that's a little bit controversial depending on who you talk to, but all that said, right, you made this point to me and you said, you know, a lot of people are like so focused on designing a unit that like you just want to stay inside, and the whole point of doing what you're doing is to experience the outdoors. Could you like tell us a little bit about like how you've thought about unit design and really just the design of the entire experience?
Yeah. So when I came to glamping, because I was dropped into it, it wasn't an industry I kind of knew anything about. So I see it as a fresh pair of eyes. And I look back to what I did. So when I was young, we used to go camping with my mum and dad at weekends and things like that. And I distinctly remember we'd go and mum and dad had set up the tent and we'd walk away. And we'd go and play football or ride a bike or climb a tree, whatever it was we were doing. When it comes to glamping is just an extension of camping. So it's glamorous camping. So when glamping came along, everybody focused on the unit, which in theory is the tent. And they want to make that as amazing as possible. but it's still kind of got lost within glamping. Everybody's gone down that route, but then not realized when we went camping, we didn't sit in the tent for 2 days. We set it up so that we had somewhere to stay at night when we got back from whatever we were doing. So when I looked at glamping, I realized glamping, what people are looking for is we're not an accommodation provider. We're an experience provider that also has accommodation for the evening. There's a big difference with it, because if you act like an accommodation provider, that's what it's all about. And people aren't looking for that. They're looking for an experience. They want to be outside in nature. So the unit to me, so the tent, really doesn't matter. There's minimum standards now within glamping. You know, you need to have a nice bed, you need to have an ensuite, you need to have heating, you need to have lighting. These things you need to have. But everybody went way, way, way too far in one direction and got lost and didn't realize what they were doing. So we focus everything on the outdoors, because if I get my job right, they shouldn't spend any time in the tent. They should be outside, you know, playing games, roasting marshmallows, watching TV in a hot tub, whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. And then when they get tired, they go and get in the tent. So we've kind of, the unit design is the last thing on the agenda. So this new one we're doing now, for 11 weeks, we've been designing the outdoor space, getting all that done. Wow. And then the unit has took us 3 weeks, because it's the last thing after everything else is done. Oh, yeah, we've got to build something for them to sleep in, because that really doesn't matter. Like I say, as long as you stick within minimum standards.
Yeah. Wow. I love that perspective. And to your point, Gary, it's very contrarian, actually, from what's happening, as you mentioned, in other parts of really the entire luxury glamping space is really been doubling down on the unit type. And I was literally having a conversation with somebody yesterday. And, you know, there's almost like this rat race of like who can build the coolest, you know, unit, right? Who can build the most differentiated, most Instagram worthy, most like one of one design. And I've been fortunate enough to experience several of these places in the States through just, you know, friends who are doing really cool things that have invited me to come out. And to your point, when I'm at these places, I end up just chilling inside because it's so freaking nice, right? It's like, you know, what's the point of going outside? And quite frankly, some of these places are in climates that like it's nice outside, but it's like Texas hill country or whatever. And it's like super hot. And it's like really, really hot. I can't even spend that much time outside, you know, because it's just so freaking hot. I'd rather just sit inside this unit, you know, scrolling on my phone, quite frankly, looking out the glass window occasionally with, you know, the AC at 62, you know, like it's just kind of funny, right? That's real. Like that's what a lot of people are optimizing for.
Yeah. And they're probably, this is why we've done so well when it comes to social media and marketing, because the key isn't me getting my content out there. The key is getting the people who are staying, the user generated content, to get out there. It's way easier to get people to share content, doing things, experiencing things, than it is getting people to share content of accommodation. Because like in your example just then, when you're sat on the bed, you're scrolling on your phone, looking at other people's content. Yeah. You're not creating content to share with other people. Because, you know, again, if you go on holiday for a week, say, in the UK, we go to Europe, you know, to the beach or whatever, and we go and stay in a hotel. Same example. Whatever hotel we're staying in, we don't take photos of the room particularly and share them. We might do once out of 7 days, but the rest of the time it's taking photos of the kids playing in the pool, it's sharing what we're having for dinner, whatever it might be. So if I tried to target 1 million people, either A, I'd never be able to do it because it'd take me forever, or B, I'd have to pay to do it. We've paid £0 on marketing or advertising at all in 4 years because our customers do it for us. If they're sat outside of an evening looking at the stars, roasting marshmallows with the kids, they're creating memories. They're sharing that content with, whether it be 100, 200, 500, 500,000 followers, it doesn't really matter. That's happening day in, day out, 13 times a day, every single day. There's no way I can put that much content out unless I employ a huge team to do it. So the easy way is to get them to do it for me.
It's genius. And, you know, the reality is user-generated content, just, you know, in general, like this is the new review, right? Like it's the validation. When somebody comes to a place and they create a reel or they create a post, they share a few photos, they write a little bit about their experience. Like that the weight that that holds is 10x, if not 100x, what anyone writes about you on Airbnb. Like, because I can see it, and you know, it's somebody that I trust, and or it's somebody that I follow. And so to your point, when you build something that is so exceptional and so differentiated, people can't help themselves but don't want to share, because quite frankly, it makes them look cool. So, you know, that it's just that's what it's all about.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right there, because, you know, things like TripAdvisor, Airbnb reviews, people discount a lot of it now. You see the one-star review and you don't believe that resort, that accommodation is one star. They've just had a bad time and they're venting.
Yeah.
And the ones that leave five stars, you don't believe it can be perfect, because nothing can be. We're all human. So that side of reviews has kind of got discounted, where if you see a customer here on a wet day in December and they're having a great time, then if you're coming on a sunny day in August, you'll have a great time. And it's, you know, customers are sick of businesses ramming content and adverts down the throat to say, because I can make this place look phenomenal, you know, by editing photos, you know, getting the perfect light and everything else. Where if a customer's having a great time, regardless whether it looks like a great picture or video, that is the indication to somebody to say, yes, I can trust that content. I want to book that content.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. I absolutely love it. Last-minute cancellations suck. And that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any three-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest, and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form, and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. As you guys, you go on to Dragon's Den, you have, as you mentioned, you're turning away thousands and thousands of inquiries a week. You've got this, you know, other site that you're working on right now. But I mean, from one perspective, you guys can't build fast enough, right? Like if you've got all these inquiries and all these people that want to stay, like you're not going to be able to build for 10,000 people every week. Like that's just impossible, right? Unless you hired an army. But how are you all thinking about scale? You mentioned earlier partnerships, you know, collaborations. Yeah. What have you thought about brand franchising talk to us a little bit about how you think about expansion at this point, given the attention that you have.
Yeah, so it's exactly that. It's a franchise partnership model that we're rolling out as we're going forward. So with me, with everything I do, it's all down to marketing and social media. Everything has that aspect to me. So we're fully booked. You know, we're fully booked for years. That's great. And I'll be totally honest, we make a really good revenue from this site, enough that I don't have to worry about things. And I'm not a greedy person in the slightest. So I wasn't really interested in building a franchise model or a partnership model to increase revenue. What I'm looking at, I'm trying to secure the current site, because our whole audience is based on content. So we have a glamping site that takes bookings, and we have a social media organization that creates content that people want to see. Now, we're stopping building. This is the last unit we're building here. So then, within 6 months, we run out of content. So in theory, our audience starts dwindling, our following goes away, our bookings will dry up. So to secure bookings for the next 5, 10, 15 years, what I'm actually trying to create is a franchise model based around me gaining content. So you as a franchisee or as a partner can do the same thing as I'm doing. You can have extra bookings. I can have extra content. And it's that sort of thing. So I'm building a franchise model about a base around taking in more and more content. So instead of me having to build new units every few weeks or every few months, actually, between a small group of people, because there's always refreshes being done. You know, we have a five-year model. So every 5 years, the unit is taken apart, redone, you know, refurnish, new features. So we create new content for each unit every 5 years. But to sustain that model, we need to have multiple sites all doing the same thing. And then we get to a point where we don't need to have 100 sites or 1,000 sites or whatever it might be, because we've got all the bookings we could ever serve. That's not the issue. But we need the content to be coming through all the time to keep this going for the next 10 and 20 years.
Yeah. And I would imagine, too, to just help beyond just the actual, you know, sustaining the number of guests over the next 5 to 10 to 20 years or whatever it is. It's also probably just to continue to show people, right, that like, hey, this is a desirable place. Even if increasing revenue isn't the goal at this particular juncture in time, if you could drive up your nightly rate, right, over the next 5 years, I mean, inflation's the thing right now, right? Like you might need to adjust that nightly rate eventually. Having fresh content, having good storytelling all the way through is only going to justify the ability to do that even more.
Exactly, yeah. And that's it. You know, a lot of people currently look at things to get things going and flip it over quickly, sell it on, move on to something else. Again, as we've said, I love this job. There's, you know, I could quite easily sell this right now. You know, we're really doing well. We're motoring. I could sell this and make a mint from it and move on to something else. And it might be, I don't know, selling cars. It might be driving vans. It might be anything. It's not going to be me doing this. So rather than me looking at an exit, I'm looking at security. So I don't want to see an exit in 5 years' time. I want to see this here in 20 years' time and me still doing the same thing. And it, that's where the model's slightly different to what anybody else is doing, because like I say, that security is based around content. That's it. And
flesh that out a little bit more for us. So like practically, what does this look like? Somebody comes to you and they say, hey, I want to build, you know, the secret garden glamping in, you know, outside of Dublin or, you know, outside of maybe it's someone in the States, right? Like I want to build this experience in Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, right? Or whatever it is. Like, so what then the agreement is, hey, you're going to document the build. You're going to document everything that's going on. We're going to share that on our, you know, kind of core parent channel, almost like a traditional franchise would, or what do you think that this actually looks like practically?
So, yeah, so everything is centralized then. So we have one website, one social media, you know, kind of brand going forward. So everything comes under this brand. So we have the Secret Garden in near Manchester. We have the Secret Garden in LA. We have the Secret Garden Barbados. That's the one I'm going to go and work at. I think that's yeah, we can have all these different things. And all this content will come in and we can share. So, because our audience is determined by our content, that's it. So currently we have enough content to put something out every day. And that's where our audience is growing, and that's the track that we're on. So we're growing day on day. We're on about 1 million followers. If we had content to put out videos 5 times a day, our audience would be bigger. And we'd have more bookings. So it's all content driven. It's not a static number. So this was what kind of twigged with me. I assumed originally, if I just build them all as quick as I can, just build more and more and more, I'll get to the point where the bookings are a level like anywhere else. But I didn't take into account every time I build a new one, we get more content, our audience grows, the bookings grow. So we're constantly ahead of it. And there's no catching up. There isn't. And unless I got to, I don't know, 10,000 units, maybe I'll catch up then. But in theory, there's no way in my lifetime to catch up to that point. So there's no point in chasing it. But what we can do is try to create more content and build that audience to create sustainability over a period of time. So that's what it is. You know, we have not only the infrastructure from a social media point of view, but websites, booking systems, payment systems, all these sorts of things. We deal with everything from acquiring the customer all the way until the customer turns up at your door. So everything, all the messages, the social media content, the emails, the welcome guides, the, like I say, the booking systems, payment systems, everything. So you do nothing until the guest gets there, knocks on your door and says, hi, I'm Dave. You welcome Dave in. So it's what I realize within glamping is most people want to run a glamping site. They don't want to be a social media content creator. They don't want to be writing emails. They don't want to be making phone calls. They don't want to be doing websites. They actually want to be meeting guests and showing them around and making sure they have a great time. But they end up doing all the back end work, because that's the stuff that's important to drive the guests to your site. So you try and be a jack of all trades. So rather than do that, get us to do all the stuff that we're really good at, and then you're the site owner, you get to welcome the guests, and that can be what they're really good at.
Yeah. I mean, it's brilliant. And, you know, it's something that I think a couple of people are playing around with, you know, right now and trying to figure out. But there isn't like a leader who's like really done this super well in this way that you're describing in the space right now. And so I think that you guys could be that that model setter, which is really interesting. I think one of the hardest things about, you know, any sort of franchise, quite frankly, but especially in like the hospitality space, is you've done such an incredible job of building this really remarkable brand. And what you see on social is great, but you know, when you show up, your experience has to at least meet, if not exceed, what you thought it would be based off of the reel that you watched, right?
Yeah.
And what can be hard, right, as a you know, franchise brand, is ensuring that quality of actual experience, right?
Yeah.
Is met. When it's not when you're not actually operating it, or your team isn't actually operating it. So, you know, it's all about finding the right partners and finding the right people that really care about guest experience, right? So it's a very solvable problem, but I just recognize that it's challenging to do. And like it's risky, quite frankly, because you have cultivated this incredible brand with this wonderful reputation. Mm-hmm. As you start sharing some of that love with others, right, you put your reputation on the line a little bit.
Yeah, it is hard. Now, the way I look at it, if you look at any kind of site owner, any glamping site, you know, within the UK or the US, when you look at reviews, almost without exception, the reviews are always good about the hosts.
Mm.
You know, maybe the facilities aren't up to their standards or whatever else, but usually you never see a comment of the site owners were horrible, they didn't want guests around. In general, most people get into hospitality because the clue's in the name, it's being hospitable, that's what people like to do. Now, what I find is the issues are usually before somebody gets there. So it's that customer journey from finding you all the way to arriving. If I've done my job correctly, when the people arrive at your gates, they should be like the kids stood outside of Disney waiting to go in. They do not care. They're just that excited. At that point, they would have an airbed on the floor. They don't care. They just want it. You know, they're really coming away to do something exciting. So as long as you live up to that, which, you know, it is relatively straightforward, you know, when you take every element out of it, with the exception of cleaning, for example, and, you know, everybody's human. There's going to be times where there'll be, you know, some muddy footprints missed or things like that. Those things can be let, you know, customers can let go of them, as long as, you know, like I said, minimum standards. You've got, you know, a nice bed, a bathroom, it's warm. Because they're not, again, with what we're doing, they're not really that interested in spending time indoors. They're more interested in spending time outdoors. And that can be set up and done really easily. Because that, you know, it doesn't matter if there's a cobweb across the trees outside, because you're outside. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's a bit different to being inside. So when you're focusing on the outdoor space, it's a lot easier to get around. Although we have issues with weather and things like that, you know, those sorts of things come up. But yeah, we're trying to take out as many as of the problem points as possible to streamline it and make it the same for every guest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible challenge. Mm-hmm. But if you can do it, it's huge, and you've been able to do it with what you've already built so far. And so I think this next level of coming up with those standards, like, hey, what does it mean to be a part of, you know, the Secret Garden, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is the kind of, these are the things about our experience. I mean, it's, you know, it's not wildly different from, you know, what Marriott does with its various brands, right?
Yeah.
When you stay at, you know, a Ritz-Carlton, or you stay at, you know, a Moxie, or you know, whatever it might be, the expectations are going to be different depending on the, you know, the actual hotel brand. And then also every hotel is different, because Marriott doesn't own most of their actual hotels, right? If any at this point. So the point being that, you know, there is a lot of trust in the brand. But then when you show up, the operations are going to be a little bit different from one Ritz to the other. And and yet I customers understand that to an extent, right? And actually like that to an extent. So now, you know, Marriott has very, very intense, well-defined brand standards, and they hold their partners to a high caliber. And so assuming you guys are able to do something like that, it really shouldn't be an issue, because, you know, in one sense, you're not recreating the wheel.
Yeah, Exactly. That's it. And this is why it's a kind of franchise partnership model, because you need to have those kind of key factors in place, which you can only do with a franchise. If it is just a partnership, you know, a handshake, well, you do this and we'll see how it goes sort of thing, that's when stuff gets lost. Where actually you've got quite a solid structure of less around the physical, again, around the units, around the site. It could be a site like ours in the Woodland. It could be a beach in the Bahamas. It could be a snow-capped mountain in the Rockies. It doesn't matter where it is or what it is, as long as we all have these minimum standards going forward.
Yeah. What I love about this is I'm thinking about some young entrepreneurs that that I know and that I've been talking to who really want to build. Like what they really want is they want to find cool land, and or they've already found cool land and they've got a vision for some cool, you know, glamping site or landscape hotel or whatever it is. Right. Sometimes it's even just like three cool cabins that they want to build. Right. So they've got a vision. They want to build this. They want to test their ability to be able to design a really cool experience. But what holds them up, right, is the fact that, like, well, I don't want to go and be a talking head on Instagram. Like, I don't want to go and have to worry about, like, how to manage all these guest communications. I want to build, right? Like, and I want to host, and I want to design a really exceptional experience. So what is really interesting is, especially if you're earlier on in your career and you have this very specific vision of, like, before I become, you know, a dairy, I want to start, and I just want to see if I have the chops and quite frankly, like, the desire to build things like this. Could I just focus on that? Like, what's the quote unquote, like, safest way that I could just focus on that? And what you're building here, what you're offering, you know, is an ability for this a young entrepreneur like the one I'm describing to do just that, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's it, because that is exactly what I do. I build all the units here. I love spending time outdoors, designing things, building things. I genuinely don't want to deal with, you know, doing cleanings, replying to emails, doing phone calls, all that sort of stuff. Although I've had to build a team around me to do that now. So then I can just focus. I can be down there like now in my scruffs, painting walls, building dens, doing that sort of stuff. And that's because that's what I have a real passion for doing. And it's the same. And so again, I usually look at it for myself. If I started again and somebody just said, well, you go and build everything, I'll do the rest, I'd be quids in. I'd be like, yes, that's perfect. That's all I want to do.
Oh, yeah, well said. Well, man, this has been awesome. I am super impressed by, again, what you guys have built, and your vision, your passion for this is just, it's infectious. The brand is phenomenal. I love the name. There's so much you could do with it. It's one of those things that's, you know, from one perspective, quite easy to franchise because of the name, and it can work in so many different contexts in so many different places. Like it's just phenomenal. You guys nailed it there. But you know, if folks who are listening to this conversation do want to get involved and or have a conversation, like, are you open to chats with people, or what's the best way for people to, like, kind of pitch themselves to you as, like, a, hey, you know, you were on, you know, the Dragon's Den. I want to figure out, I've got a vision. I think that what you're doing from a brand perspective aligns with what I want to do as a builder, as an entrepreneur. What's the best way for people to you know, get in touch with you to see if you might be interested?
Yeah, I that's what I really do love. I always say the same thing. Anybody can reach out to me at any time. My phone number is still the phone number on the website. It's my phone number. I still answer the phone for everybody. So on the website, you know, my email address is info@thesecretgardenglamping.uk. You can send me an email. You can contact me through social media, through any of our platforms. Everything ultimately comes to me, and then I decide where it goes from there. But I love speaking to people all over the world with all different ideas, because it's genuinely a passion of mine, glamping, and not just what I'm doing, what other people are doing. I love coming up with new ways of doing things. And when I speak to people, even like doing this, I sit here and work out what I'm doing. Because if I don't speak out loud, it's usually just in my head, and I find it hard to kind of streamline everything into points. But when I talk about it with other people, whether that be on a podcast like this or whether it just be somebody sending me an email with ideas about things, it gets my mind working. So I get as much benefit out of it as anybody else does. But I'm always happy to talk about anything, whether it be social media, whether it be glamping, whether it be whatever. I'm happy to talk to anybody. So yeah, just hit me up through any of the social channels or the website. You can find it all on there.
Amazing. And I'll have it all linked in the show notes below. One final question for you, Dairy, since you kind of brought this up and it sparked an idea in my head. of a question I've been wanting to ask you is, from your perspective, right, as somebody who's grown this awesome business, there's a lot of runway ahead for you. As you've gotten to know a little bit more about, you know, the industry, and I'm sure you've had the opportunity to meet and or at least been reached out to by loads of people, investors, people that have got, you know, landowners themselves, like all sorts of people, right? Where do you see opportunity for, like, if young entrepreneur is listening to this right now, and maybe you know the Secret Garden franchise model isn't quite for them, but where, from your perspective and your vantage point, knowing the industry now and being, you know, somebody who's at the upper echelon of the of success here, what advice and or where do you see opportunity for somebody to build?
So the way, again, I mean, the main thing is forget about the units. Forget about that side of thing. If I was going to start over again today from square one, I'd start with one. I wouldn't start with 5 or 10 or 20. It's really hard to get everything right on a large scale. Plus, the market's always changing. So the one good thing has been here, if you look at the first unit I built to what I'm building today, it's night and day. It's like a different product because over the space of 4 years, trends change, your audience changes, what people are looking for changes. So you can navigate that way better by doing, you know, staging stuff 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So you don't have that crunch of, right, suddenly, like COVID was a perfect example, suddenly people can't go away where anybody else is. So if you've got shared facilities, you're done. You can't use them anymore. And that was a big line in the sand. And that, you know, something like that can happen again. So if you're constantly evolving as you go along from 1 to 2 to 3, then you've got opportunity to be, you know, really quick to move if you need to. So I'd start with one. Again, I'd keep the unit quite basic. We don't do anything over about 25 square meters now because, again, anything over that size is not cost effective. But focus on wherever you are in the world, whether you're by a beach, by a mountain, you know, on a river, whatever it might be, focus on creating something there that you'd like doing. And the only way to do that really is to spend time in that environment. So that's what I do here. I don't start building. I'll just be down there for a bit and think, oh, it'd be good if there was a swing there, or if, you know, I could have a bench there. And this is constantly evolving. So focus on the outdoor space. Focus on what the customers are going to do when they come there, and what can you provide that other people aren't doing. Obviously, at the minute, spa facilities are doing really well, saunas, hot tubs, steam rooms, you know, activities, you know, things like pool tables, table tennis tables, you know, stuff that's really, really simple.
Yeah.
So anybody can do it. Don't, you know, don't choose something that you have to be technically proficient to do. But something like pool, for example. My son is 9 years old. He can't really play pool. But it's great to just stand there for an hour while you knock some balls around and kind of let him win a little bit. And it's just a really nice feeling, and you create some memories and you're dead happy. So things that are easy to do, like board games with half the pieces missing because it's fun. You know, just little. Imagine, again, being 12 years old, what would you want to do? Because ultimately, if you feel like a child, you will experience it like a child. You're not going to be uptight and stiff about it. So, yeah, start with something that's on its own. Focus on the outdoor space. Don't worry about the unit. And kind of stay within them minimum standards and you'd be fine.
Ah, very, very, very cool stuff, man. I'm super thankful for you and for you spending the time to come and share a little bit of your story with us today. For folks who are tuning in that want to learn more about Dairy and what he's building, and if you aren't familiar with Secret Garden Glamping, you absolutely should be. So I'll have links to social handles, emails, all that fun stuff in the show notes below. Dairy, thank you so much for your time, man. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote-unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.